Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. First, we want to wish and hope that everybody had a very Merry Christmas if you celebrated that on Saturday. Hope that everybody is enjoying your holidays. Shad and I are back today with really just one interview as we are chatting with Dr. Jim Jones, private investor, well known on CEO.ca, as well as a couple other blogs and websites focusing on really resource investing. And Doc Jones, we brought you on the show this year, and I have to say your due diligence and really your isolation of high quality stocks or those that you think are undervalued has caught a lot of people's attention, because this year we all know how difficult of a year it has been for precious metals investors if you were buying a whole basket of stocks, but you managed to isolate just a handful of stocks that did very well this year. So that has garnered you a very good following that then makes us think, well, what is Doc Jones like heading into next year? Before we get into some of those stocks, let's talk about the precious metals and your general outlook for not just gold, but the way the stocks are going to react. What type of a year is it going to be next year, Dr. Jim Jones, for the precious metals and the precious metals stock?
Hi, Corey. Hey, Shad. Thanks for having me back. I've actually increased my allocation towards precious metals going into year end. Part of that was from tax loss selling because there were some really good opportunities that presented itself. And I also think that gold developers, mainly developer explorers, that hybrid model is where I like to be, will do fairly well. I see the gold price oscillating between maybe 1750 up to as high as 1950 towards year end. And going into 2023, I think that'll be a really robust year. So I'm basically positioning now for the back end of 2022, primarily because there's a lot, as you've said, you know, the sector itself was under a lot of pressure this year. And I think there are some really good deals out there currently, if you do your due diligence, you know, that, and it all comes about the economics. You know, you want to find something that has a very high margin ounces, regardless of the grade of their deposit, because grade means nothing in a vacuum. It's all about grade compared to mining costs. You know, like you could have a high grade deposit of, call it, you know, 10 grams a ton, but if your cost, if it's way down deep, you got to sink a shaft and it looks like your cost per ounce is going to be about $1,200, $1,300 an ounce to produce. It's really not a great margin, you know, like it's a good margin, but it's not a great margin compared to some of the other producers out there, open pit producers or what seems like low grade, but it's close to the surface, long hole stoping, and then your cost is going to be $900 an ounce. So you really have to understand what it is you're buying, you know. Too many investors get caught up in the flashiness of a grade. You know, they get, oh, 2 meters of 100 grams, and it's, yeah, but it's 1,100 feet down, and it's also, you know, refractory or something like that, you know, which lends itself to very low recoveries as opposed to oxide, which is very easy to recover. So I'm being very selective and looking into a few of those stories. And I also like to remind investors, you know, that you really have to be systematic and methodical in your investing. You know, what is the team? What have they done before? Look at the capital structure. Right now, I'm only investing in companies that are cashed up for at least a year, year and a half, which means no dilution. So any success that they experience will not be mitigated in the share price by going to the market and raising money immediately, which you see that happens a lot. As well as you want to check the capital structure for any outstanding warrants options that are either in the money or not. And if they're coming up to expiration, which they're going to be forced to exercise, you know, that could create some overhead resistance to price. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. I actually, I recently invested in a gold company in the United States. Before, I had said that I was staying away from the United States because of the political environment, but Nevada has its own, it's like its own country. It's the one of the best places to do mining of gold. So I've allowed my capital to migrate there a bit of it. So that's been very interesting.
Dr. Jones, let's get into some of the companies that you're looking at. I mean, I know that you're very selective. And as you mentioned, you're looking for cashed up companies that have a good team, good projects. The economics make sense to you. I know you do a ton of research when you look at a company. Maybe mention one of the precious metals companies that's caught your eye as far as either one that you're positioning now or one that you're looking at getting into moving into the new year.
I am very selective. So I'll give you two. There's Millennial Precious Metals. That's the one in Nevada. Now, this is a company that from Waterton picked up some land packages from them that were basically off the market for 20 years. At the IPO, they came public with 1.2 million ounces of oxide gold, open pitable heap leach operation. So they're basically a developer explorer. And the two projects is one's Wildcat, and they have about 800,000 ounces there. And the strip ratio there is 0.16. That is incredible. It's basically no strip, right? And in this area, the cost is basically, it costs $8 a ton to mine, mill, and process, including your G&A. And the in-situ value is about $30 a ton in the rock. So your margin is about 70%. Which is incredible. And the grade is, you know, around 0.75 grams per ton. So at first blush, people go, oh, that sounds very low grade. But if you understand oxide mining operations, like Banyan Gold up in the Yukon, right? You know, like it's a low grade deposit at first blush, but it's going to make a lot of money because of the low cost, and it's right at surface. Same with Millennium Precious Metals. And the thing is there, the expansion possibilities, I never invest in anything unless there's an upside to expansion. And in gold, I believe you have to have a pathway that is reasonable geologically and using the science that it could be over 3 million ounces. And so Millennium Precious Metals fits that bill. The surface expression that hasn't been drilled yet where this Wildcat deposit is, they've got 2.4 kilometers by 1.2 kilometers to a depth of 150 meters so far identified with it still within the oxide. And if you do the math on that and just assign that only 50% of that is mineralized, which the CEO said he'd be surprised if it was at least 60%, and you use a bulk density of 2.7, which is pretty standard, you get well over 4 million ounces within that area. And the thing about oxide gold open pit, like an orogenic system, for example, to develop a greenfields project into 1 million ounces of inferred generally will cost you about $30 to $40 million of capital spending. Whereas with an open pit oxide in Nevada, generally $6, maybe $7 million to put that 1 million ounces of inferred on the books, so that your cost per discoverable ounce is extremely low. Which is why these projects, once they get over 1.5 million, 2 million ounces, they get bought up. There's very few of them left. They get taken over because they are very low capital cost to put into production. $100 million, you could set up an operation that will produce 100,000 ounces a year. And they're very, very simple metallurgically, right? So that's Millennium Precious Metals.
So, Doc Jones, before we move on to the other stock, when Millennial Precious Metals, I looked into that. I personally don't know the company overly well, but we will get you to put us in touch with them. The company holds 7 total projects in Nevada here. I understand that the flagships being Wildcat and Mountain View. But as you mentioned, this company just came public at the very beginning of 2021. This year, you're not expecting them to actually be in production, right? This year is maybe going to be a bit more of a growth year, growing the current resources.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I just bring up what it would cost to go into production, all that. So, because that's another reason, that's one of the main things you look for also when you're investing in a company is, will this ever be a mine? You know, what is it going to cost them or the acquirer to put something like this into production, right? But no, right now they're in total resource expansion mode. They're cashed up. They've got like 17 million, and I only talk about their two projects because that's where the combined resource is. But they also have the other project that they have, which is Red Mountain, which earlier this year when they came public, you know, no one was really paying attention to this company, also because of just the general market. But at Red Canyon, here's an intercept that they had 4.5 grams per ton of oxide over 54 meters. And within that, they had 9 grams per ton over 22 meters. This is oxide, right? This is the stuff that's cost you $8 a ton to mill, mine, process. And you do the math on 9 grams per ton. That's like a gram is what, about $30 or $30, $40, something like that. So your margin there on that type of intercept is just incredible. But they just came public. That's another reason I like them, is because nobody knows about them. They silently basically came public. And I know Eric Sprott took He owns 15% of the company. And when they came public, they did it without any warrants. And if you look at the capital structure, there's, I believe there's like 130 million shares out. But as far as combined warrants and options, the only thing that's on the capital structure there as far as warrants and options is about eight or 9 million warrants and options, which are primarily the broker-dealer ones that they had to give to do the IPO. So it's very, very tight, right? And it's very, very institutional ownership is around 70%. So there isn't a lot of float out there to trade either, which is another positive thing.
Okay. Well, again, we will reach out to that company and bring them on the show for a bit more of, I guess, overview of the company. But thanks for your insights there, Dr. Jones. What about the other company that you wanted to bring up in terms of the precious metals that you like heading into next year?
Well, there's Cassiar Gold, which is up in northern BC, where they have the old Cassiar project, where they consolidated those land packages there. And they have the Table Mountain and then the Cassiar, which is Cassiar North, which is a large open pit where they have over a million ounces there identified that is within 100 meters of surface, 1.4, 1.5 grams per ton. And they've been expanding that one there. And then they've been drilling the Table Mountain project, which was a historic orogenic system that produced about 400,000 ounces over its life at around 16 grams per ton, extremely high grade. They have Bill Irwin there as one of the technical advisors. He does it. It's an analog to Fosterville. They have Steve Letwin, who was the head of IM Gold. He's the chairman and also the largest single shareholder. The company's head by Mark O'Rourke. And there you have a company that I think the market cap today is something around 40 or 50 million Canadian, where they have about 7 million in cash. They have a permitted mill on the other site. They have a large resource that has been growing. And I did the modeling using the drill results from 2020 and 2021. Then I suspect the Cassiar open pit, we're going to get around 1.7, 1.8 million ounces, close to 2 million there. And then the Table Mountain, they've been drilling with the high grade, that's just going to sweeten the economics. And the thing there is that it's right off the highway. There's a highway that runs through the property. This is all about, you know, who would want to buy this at some point, right? So you have so much infrastructure there. You've got power, water, roads, full winterized camp. You have a permitted mill, which that knocks 2 years off of development because it's already permitted because it was a historic brownfield site. So because of the labs that have been backed up, particularly in Yellowknife, with the lab that serves Cassiar, you're seeing that all these plays that historically would have their assays out by now and then have that kind of orphan period in the spring and early summer where there's no news flow because no one's back drilling yet. They've, because of the delays, you're going to see a steady stream of assays coming out over the next few months out of them, which will kind of bridge the gap into the next drill season. So that's pretty exciting. I like the economics there that they have, you know, just as it is, I see the company being worth, you know, 100 and 150 million just for what they have. Because again, when I invest in gold companies, I look for a mineable resource already on the books that if you had to, you could contemplate putting it into production profitably. And this is one of these scenarios, whereas the open pit is the mineralization there. It's all free milling. And they have historic metallurgy when it was produced before, which was very positive. And at Table Mountain, where you have the sulfide, they were recovering there from that small mill. That's like 300 tons a day that is permitted there. The old mill that's there that was refurbished in the, I think it was 2000. They were recovering, I think it was 87, 90%. So very favorable economics. So those two I'm really focused on. And then I have a third, Big Reg Gold, which is about to announce their first ever assays from their drill program expanding in Newfoundland. So that makes up the core of my precious metal investings. As you said, my portfolio, I only hold about 10 names. And now precious metals is about 15% of my portfolio. So that's where I stand with the gold.
Well, Doc Jones, just one more follow-up on Cassiar just before we move on to another commodity. When you have a company that's a solid team like that, they've got the infrastructure, they've got a resource in the ground that you think is looking economic, they've already had a nice move. You know, they've already had a pretty big move up in contrast to a lot of other companies. I realize they still have the drill results coming, you know, the assays, but what do you see as the main value driver while you're in it? Are you looking in it for how they could get taken over down the road? Or are you looking in it for an economic study that would daylight more value? Are you looking at it strictly for the expiration upside? What is it you think will be the big value driver in a company like Cassiar in 2022 compared to where it's already at?
Well, I think it'll be the resource expansion. Generally, when I invest in, I rarely trade, right? You know, and the size of positions that I take lends itself towards looking to harvest my gains year, 2 years down the line at a liquidity event, which would likely be a takeout. That's what I'm looking at, just generally in anything I invest in. And here this year, you're going to get a lot of assays and a lot of expansion of resource. I think we'll get an actual resource update, which they haven't done in almost 2 years now. And they've had two drill programs since. So I think you'll get a re-rate on the back of that. And ultimately, what I'm looking for is that by the end of 2023, that expansion of the open pit, as well as the Table Mountain resource, to be combined into a resource that exceeds over 3 million ounces at a very, very favorable grade, very economic, and looking for them to be taken out. That's the path that I'm looking at, because as far as the geology there and the prospective upside, this has to be proven. This is the, you know, the optimistic case could be over 5-6 million ounces. Currently, we sit at probably about 1.67 on the books. So between here and there, there's a lot of upside and revaluation to come in, especially at Table Mountain. The average grade there that they mined would be one of the highest grades in the world. Plus, they have another project, another land package down in southern BC, which is an orogenic system. They have a whole district there, basically. And the historic production there was 700,000-800,000 ounces at about 12 grams per ton. And they haven't done any work on that either. And I think that's going to come into the fray in the beginning of 2023. They may even spin it off into a separate company. I don't think they're getting any value for it at all in the current market cap. So that's what I'm looking at with Cassiar Gold, a continued expansion. And they do what, as far as capital, right? They have that $7 million in cash, but they have between now and the end of this year, $11 million in warrants that are in the money that will have to be called in. And they have an acceleration clause on them, and majority of those are held by funds. So I'm looking for 2022 to not have any dilution from a private placement or anything like that, and that they will be self-funding into 2024, because in 2023, they have another $8 million in warrants that are in the money currently. So they call all those in. The market cap will be, today it's $63 million. I'm just checking right now. So they call everything in, then they have a market cap of about $84 million. But of that market cap, you would have about $21 million in cash. And by the time they exhaust that treasury, I suspect they'll be well above 3 million ounces, at which time I think we'll be looking at a company that will have a market cap in excess of $200-300 million.
All right, Doc Jones, let's move on to another sector then. There's two other sectors somewhat related that we want to touch on, because you have, let's say, a bit broader of a bullish outlook for these sectors. Let's start with energy, because you've been on recently, the last couple of months, you've been really talking up energy. Take us through why you like the energy sector and share with us, please, a stock you like.
Yeah, sure. Actually, I think I can remember it was about this time last year when I had said, you know, go into energy. And that's been an incredible trade. You know, it's made a lot of money. Like energy, it's just a backdrop for people. We are in an energy crisis. If you don't know, go check the news. Go to oilprice.com and just to see what it is. Like, for example, Dutch liquefied natural gas delivery there is $360 per BOE. For Japan LNG, $300 per BOE. That's incredible. Like, when did you think you'd see deliveries of natural gas to be like 4x the oil price? And the thing is also, as far as the backdrop, the macro of the global natural gas market, there's a lack of capacity for LNG terminals as well as carriers. So you're not going to see these things change that much in the next couple of years. I think the two-decade bear market for natural gas has ended, especially with the push to close down all coal-fired plants. You need electric generation, and no one seems to be getting behind nuclear at this point on a global scale. There is a push for that, but in these markets that are short gas, they are not able to bring that online in the near term. So, you know, you've got this inelastic demand with a backdrop of decreasing supply. So it's becoming a very competitive market for natural gas. Oil, the same. OPEC spare capacity is coming down considerably. And when you look at the as far as the global reserves for oil, and we're all aware of the war against fossil fuels, especially in the United States, which is preventing the growth of their own capacity production. Production is actually down this month. I think it was 200,000 barrels a day. Yeah, we've only got about 44 years of proved reserves globally for oil at the current state of consumption. And unless population growth stops and reverses, the demand for energy will increase. It's directly correlated to population, as well as gets magnified and increased disproportionately as third world countries become more industrialized. So that 44 years at current consumption is probably more like 28 years, maybe 30 years. So it's in the meantime, we're just going to see higher and higher prices, I think. As far as investment thesis, I've avoided the United States primarily because of the political climate. They are making it impossible for companies to expand production there. It's just the taxation regime and the EPA. It's not a place where I want to put my capital. So I'm looking at places outside of the United States, such as NG Energy in Colombia, which is a pure natural gas player that is about to go into their first production at their Maria Conchita. So they'll be cash flowing and building production there while concurrently drilling their other huge land package, which is over 1 million acres in Colombia, that has the Sino 9 prospect, which is right next to Conoco's big land package, where they drilled a bunch of wells there that came online 30 million, 40 million, 50 million a day. The Sino 9 prospectivity is that field is said to hold possibly in excess of 1.3 TCF of gas. So that equates to over 340, 350 million BOEs of natural gas. And Colombia itself is a great market because it receives a premium to NYMEX gas. Currently, the premium is 85%. Gas there is about $7.50 an MCFE, where in the United States, it's just under $4. Plus, it's a lower cost production regime because your fixed costs are paid in local currency, which is devaluing 10% a year against the U.S. dollar. So it's my favorite play in natural gas currently, because you have their downside is hedged against the wells that are going on production now. So they'll be cash flowing, and then you can put a multiple on that cash flow, which means that its shares will be undervalued just on that. Then you have the extreme upside of Sino 9. So that's how I'm playing natural gas right now. I'll actually be in Colombia in February. I'm planning on going down for a site visit there. So I may have more information for you then. I like to make sure that I'm a proactive activist investor. I stay very close to the companies that I put my capital in, because I only have at the most 10. So each one of them gets a lot of time every week. Yeah, so that's the energy market that I'm looking at, as well as there's also a high risk, high reward exploration in CGX Energy, but that's a binary outcome. I only put a small amount of capital in there. They're drilling a field right now in Guyana next to Exxon's billion barrel discovery. So that's either, you know, 5-10x up in the next month, or I'm going to lose 70% of my capital. But again, for those who are listening, it's a very, very, very small allocation of my total net worth, and it's structured that if it goes to zero, it's not going to affect me. So I would like to caution people who invest in those binary outcomes to be intelligent about it.
Well, Doc, there's one other sector that still relates to energy, and that's really more the battery metal side of things, you know, your coppers, your zincs, your things like that. I think you are well known for the coverage you've put out this year in a number of reports and videos, and even some of your own podcasts on Emerita Resources. And I know we have a number of folks on our site that follow the story. Do you have an update for us on that other side of the energy spectrum?
Yeah. Well, Emerita Resources in particular, I think as far as in a macro sense, this energy crisis is going to pull forward even more infrastructure spending and build out for grid storage, the green economy. So with Emerita Resources, they have two of their largest resources within their vast treasure trove of resources is zinc and copper. And we're seeing a really, really bullish backdrop for both of those. with Amerita Resources, it's done remarkable. I was in Spain just a few weeks ago visiting, and we have a bunch of major catalysts coming in Q1. You know, the stock has re-rated over the last year to reflect a company that is potentially going to have about 40 billion in high grade resources and historical resources with the awarding of the Asna Collier land package, which the administrative court is now deciding. And those who followed it, it looks like very, very, very positive for Amerita. And I'm suspecting that that's going to come sometime towards the end of January, but sometime in the first quarter. They said they were making a decision imminently, and when you're dealing with government, that usually means, you know, months to half a year. So it's already been 3 months, so we're getting into the window of any day now. So I think that'll come in. And they're also about to be awarded their permits for Romanera now, Kira, which was really, they've gone from basically one rig to five now. They're drilling, they have five drill rigs on La Infanta, which is the other deposit that is just expanding. And I've modeled that out with the drill intercepts that they've probably gone to over 4 million tons there. And the grades there are about $1,000 a ton. So that's just phenomenal. And then they're going to go to eight drill rigs. The CEO David Gower said as soon as they get the Romanera El Cura permit, they're going to have eight drill rigs running across the IBW, expanding that project, which now has an in-situ value of the high grade that exceeds Metsa, which was sold, which had about 11 billion in in-situ, which Amerita now has about that, but at 60% higher grades and right at surface as where the mineralization begins. So I think we have quite a ways to go as far as getting to fair value under my model of what it's worth. And at the site visit, I was telling you this offline that we went to the Romanera to do a site visit there of that area, and both the mayors of Pomogo and Playo de Guzman came, as well as the head of the mining department. And then on the site visit, also the environment department came and toured around with us. So there's a lot of support for Amerita and country. So I don't see any issues with any of this coming to fruition. Yeah, and then they have the Nuevo Tintilo package, which no one knew about, which is between the Rio Tinto deposit, the largest massive sulfide accumulation in the history of mankind. And on the other side, you have the Asna Collier and Las Cruces. And between Asna Collier and Rio Tinto is about 40 kilometers. And Amerita has 28-kilometer package right in the center that is along the volcanic horizon that created all three of these world-class mines. And I did a tour there, went into a historical mine that was shut down right after the First World War. And the mineralization is just, you can see that just the copper embedded in the walls, the green, the blue, and the veining. So that's another lever that will be pulled this year. So I think it's going to be a pretty phenomenal year for them. They're cashed up with $26 million in the bank. And at the site visit, we had like over 30 people there, bankers, analysts. And I think it's definitely one to watch. It's been de-risked considerably. So I'm looking for that to be taken out within 2 years of them being awarded Asna Collier, because it's just too valuable a land package that a major will have to have it in their portfolio, because the size of the historical resource and then the expansion possibilities, this would be something that would produce for decades and decades. It'd be multi-generational mine there. And it's, again, it's right off the highway, and it's going to be one of the greenest mines when it does get developed. It's surrounded by solar fields. Yeah, we don't have the time for me to go into all the attributes, obviously, but if anyone's interested, there's a lot of research that I put out on that on ceo.ca. I have 10 reports there, and there's numerous YouTube videos with various YouTubers covering it. So
there's a lot to be excited about for that stock. Hey, Doc Jones, you've chatted with us about it a couple of times, and boy, oh boy, did it do well this year. Next year, still a lot of catalysts, it sounds like, on the horizon. Doc Jones, it's always great hearing about the stocks you're buying. I know that some of you have already heard before, but Doc Jones does lay out why he still likes these stocks going into next year. Dr. Jim Jones, great having you on the show. Nice touching base with you this year. It's been a pleasure hearing all of your research and the stocks that you like. I look forward to chatting with you next year. So, hey, Doc Jones, again, thank you for your time this year, and I hope you have a very happy new year.
Yeah, thank you. You as well, Corey and Shad. And I wish you the best in the coming year. And thank you again for providing such a great platform for investors to come and find really high quality information that you guys put out there.